Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to the Lifebook Member Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Parenting Month, powerful parenting month, and it's appropriate that my father is this episode's guest. How you doing, Dad?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Jordan.
Of course. We've got some great questions. Before we get into it, let's talk a little bit about parenting, man. Let's talk a little bit about your parenting beliefs, and you know, you did a lot of work with Nathaniel Brandon in the past. I've been kicking around this idea that I would love to run by you. Basically, it involves, you know, beliefs come up so much in the Lifebook Podcast, not just because Lion is doing, you know, these clearings monthly. It's always ever present in the Lifebook process.
Absolutely. So, it's something big that we do at Lifebook, right?
It is. And the ultimate belief source is your parents, because they're who you're around the most generally when the when
at
you're
least
the youngest.
It's at least your first belief source.
100%. So there's this kind of belief perpetuation cycle that's been going on forever. My father was a disciplinarian, therefore I'm a disciplinarian. Or maybe a more unhealthy version would be my father was an alcoholic, so now I'm an alcoholic, or I'll marry an alcoholic. This is the belief perpetuation cycle that persists for most people, by which I mean over half, I would estimate. But there's a small percentage of people that have the absolute opposite reaction. You see them and you go, why don't you drink? You never drink. Well, my dad was an alcoholic. I decided I was never going to touch this stuff when I was a kid.
Yeah, that's true.
Usually it's like, you know, there's four kids and one of them goes that direction, right? So I've been thinking about this for a long time. And this month I've been asking experts. I asked Shelley Lefko. She had a great answer. She's a belief specialist. She said, I ask my clients that a lot. And my theory is that somewhere along the way when they were young, they were exposed to the belief it could be different. The other kids were not exposed to that belief. Some event or some person put it in that one kid. I thought that was amazing. I've always kind of thought it was genetic. I've talked about it before. Like, you talked to Kenny Aronoff, why are you such a badass? He's like, well, my grandpa was a badass and he fought in World War II and my dad's a badass. I was like, I always kind of thought it was genetic. Lion had an amazing answer. He said, I don't know. I wonder if it has something to do with karma. of course, Lion has an answer like that. But what do you think of that, man?
Well, you know, I asked Nathaniel Brandon that question once, and he said, you know, he was a psychologist for 40 years, world class, one of the greatest psychologists of the 20th century. And he said, you know, John, there's a term that I think that he used this term with his peers. It's basically, he called these kids the untouchables. And they were big, like Oprah Winfrey is a perfect example. If you take a look at Oprah's environment, there is no way she should have made it out of there. Okay. No way. Like it would have been a million to one shot, right? But she did, and there was nothing that could hold her back or keep her down. There was something in her soul, despite, you know, I don't know if she had any role models that she could, you know, lean on in her life. Despite the dismal circumstances that she grew up in, it didn't dampen her soul or spirit or her drive or her will, and she went on to become what she went on to become. Well, there are countless stories like that in history, and Nathaniel and his peers used to call these kids the untouchables. No matter, you know, does not matter that they're born into these horrendous circumstances with horrendous beliefs, horrendous adult behavior around them. There's something inside of them that sees a better future for themselves, and that's what they go for. So that's just an interesting response, right?
Absolutely. And I don't want to just seem like I'm blowing smoke here or anything, but you're one of those people, man. I brought it up in the Lion interview. You did not have the easiest childhood. I didn't want to make it seem like you had a bad childhood. I know you had a lot of great times, but when you know, grandpa, your dad is working a bunch of jobs and you got a bunch of kids and sometimes there's not enough food on the table, man, you came from some rough stuff. You could have gone a different direction easily.
Yeah, I had no question. I had a very mixed, I had a good childhood, but we had our challenges, our hard challenges. And I do remember, Jordan, taking a look at my dad and his talents and his behaviors and saying, there are certain things about my dad that I absolutely consciously want to bring forward into my life. And there are certain things about my dad that I refuse to allow into my life. I made conscious choices that I'm going to take, that I want to be like. that over there, I'm not doing that. I'm going the opposite direction. So I did a little bit of both. My dad was a really good role model in a lot of ways for me. And he was, how do I put this charitably? He was a cautionary tale in other ways. And so I had a real mixed bag. And, you know, I think that that's the ideal situation. Like, I hope that you and your brothers and sisters do that with me and Miss, and your kids do that with you. You 100%. Basically look at your parents and you say, these were the things that I really admired and respected and want to put forward in my life. And these things over here were not ideal, and I'm not going to do that. I believe that it's every generation's job to be better than the last generation. And when I look at my dad, where he came from, he absolutely accomplished that. I accomplished that. And I believe you're accomplishing that. So, dude, as long as we're graphing in the right direction, we're doing good, right?
Then it's worth an investment. If there's an upward trend, it's worth the investment.
That's exactly right.
All right, man. Let's jump into these questions. Are you down?
Sure. Let's do it.
All right. We just switched over to an internet line to improve the audio here. So we're going to get into the questions here.
Okay, before we start the questions, I would like to just request for everybody listening to this podcast to write in questions every month to us. So next month is social month. If you have any questions around the social category for me and Jordan to talk about, please shoot them over.
Love it. Get on it, people. First question coming from Zeta. Why, as human beings, do we choose to have children? Is there an innate desire within the body that wants to experience parenthood? Or is it that humans choose to have children because society has told us that that's our purpose in life? Do you believe that a man or a woman needs to experience parenthood so that they can become complete as a human? Or do you believe that we can still live a fulfilling life without necessarily experiencing parenthood?
Well, that's a pretty deep... Actually, that was a two-part question. Why, as human beings, do we choose to have children? And do we think that you can be complete without it? Well, look, we have the instinct to have kids because that's how we propagate the species. I mean, every living organism has one freaking basic job to do, right? Which is to survive long enough to have sex and reproduce.
Yes.
That is, from a cosmic perspective, from an evolutionary perspective, the most important job of every living organism is to stay alive long enough till you can have sex and reproduce. That's kind of our cosmic job. And like I said at Lifebook, you know, the entire human race depends on at least some of us doing that job well, right?
Yeah, that's why we're here, in fact.
Exactly. Now, I think, of course, that a man and a woman don't need to have kids to be fulfilled or to be complete. And there are countless examples of that. That being said, there's a certain kind of fulfillment that only children can bring. Mm. And it can't be experienced in any other way. So, you know, it's like a love relationship. You can be a totally fulfilled single person, but there's a certain kind of fulfillment that only comes with a great love relationship. I think the same thing is true with financial abundance. You can be a completely happy person without financial abundance, but there's a certain kind of fulfillment and happiness that financial abundance brings that you won't be able to experience unless you have it. It's pretty much the same thing with anything. I don't think you need to have kids to be a fulfilled person, but having kids brings this certain thing that you can only get by having kids.
I think there's
not for everyone, JB. It's not for everyone, but I will tell you, for those of us who choose to do it, we ought to take that responsibility seriously because it's a big job and it's an important job.
It is. And I think there's a lot of high level ways to reach your fullest potential and live your dream. And of course, you'll be able to always have the kind of grass is greener effect. But I mean, think about it this way. Think about a monk. Think about a monk, you know, who spends his entire day meditating and achieving enlightenment. That's a different kind of commitment to reach a different kind of, you know, epic greatness.
You can be fulfilled without doing that, but there's a certain kind of fulfillment that probably only comes with doing that.
100%.
It's about choices. You gotta choose the direction you want to go in each one of these 12 categories.
So the question is, do you feel okay? Do you feel okay with not having children? Do you feel okay with having children? Do you feel do you feel okay only eating a couple bowls of rice every single day for the rest of your life? That's really the only question that you can ask yourself and the only question that you can answer yourself.
Good call, JB. And that's a beautiful question to ask. You know, one of the fascinating aspects of life is that we really get to create our own lives in the image of our own values. We get to choose, is being a parent a value to me or not? Is being in a love relationship a value to me or not? Is meditating in a cave and trying to achieve enlightenment or financial abundance or, you know, anything else? Is that something I want to go after in my life? We get to compose our own story, and that's just a beautiful thing. That's mm-hmm. what we're doing here in the Lifebook community, trying to do that consciously.
Absolutely. Nothing better. Good luck, Zeta. Next question from Jody. I would like to know a good way to introduce my kids to Lifebook as a way to be self-directed in their lives, set goals, but not become too overwhelmed, and I still want them to be kids. I want to support them in their goals and encourage excellence, but not make them feel pushed. Interestingly enough, you tried Lifebook for teens. Can you talk about that a little bit?
What we did last year at Mindvalley University in Estonia is we basically played the old Lifebook program for teens. So it was only Lifebook for teens in the sense that there was nothing but teens in the room. And it didn't work very well, Jordan. And the reason it didn't work very well is because we had some kids in that room were 12, 13 years old, and that's just too young. My personal feeling is that 16 is about the entry level age that you need to be Ooh. To really understand Lifebook. And I strongly, strongly, strongly recommend that you have your older teens do Lifebook just as soon as you possibly can. It is a magic experience for kids that are mature enough to do it. Now, before that, when they're younger, you can start talking to them about these categories. You know, it's like, look, kiddos, these are the important areas of life that you're going to want to really learn to master. You've got your own character, and you want to build that in a conscious way. You've got your emotional life, your intellectual life, your spiritual life. Eventually, you'll have a love relationship. You'll want to find a fulfilling career at some point, or maybe more than one point in your life that creates financial abundance, so you can have the freedom that you know. You can start talking to kids about this earlier. By the time they're 16, 17, 18, they'll be able to go through the program. And we will get Lifebook for Kids done at some point. It's a big job.
Definitely big job. Yeah. But, you know, I also think that it's a certain level of maturity and it's a certain type of kid too, right? Because the older kids were definitely more likely to do it, but some kids in the room, some of the teens in the room caught on. So I think it's important to present it to them. And if they show interest, you know, if they give a little bit of energy back, then go deeper. If they don't, then that's when you don't want to be the pushy parent, obviously. But I think some kids are going to stick to it. Some kids are going to be a little more mature and be like, this is interesting to me, you know, earlier than others. So I think presenting it is important, like you said.
I agree 100%. And I think 16, 17, 18, that's the time you want to do it. And if you can get them to go through, they will have a massive advantage for the rest of their lives.
I went through at 18, and boy, does my Lifebook look different. But man, it set me up for... Literally, it was a 10-year life vision. I now have fulfilled a lot of stuff in that Lifebook, including paying my bills, working a job that I can do from anywhere in the world.
You know what, JB, the most important thing in my mind about a teen going through Lifebook is framing up your life in the 12 category way. Using that is just a way to wrap your mind around your life and know what you need to focus on. That's a hugely valuable thing to do, as opposed to kind of, because it can be overwhelming, right? Especially at that age. Oh my God, our kids have challenges that we can't even relate to. The world was so different. And I think really giving them that 12 category structure is a big, big advantage.
Totally. Good luck, Jody. Next question coming from Fatma. Is it egotistical to want to have kids? I'm afraid of giving birth. I have been my entire life. I'm not sure why. I blame the horrifying portrayal of childbirth. And while I'm choosing a sustainable green lifestyle, I have some questions on whether it's wise to choose to have children for my own egotistical need to fulfill my calling as a mother, egotistical in quotes there. Raising children nowadays is depicted like this, and I still have in my life vision to have two kids, raising them to be conscious contributors to a better world.
Holy shit, man. Sorry for the French, but I mean, if raising children nowadays is depicted as egotistical and unwise, that may be the most ridiculous brule I have ever encountered in my entire life. You know what I mean? Having the urge to have kids is one of the biggest urges we have. Well, it's the urge to have sex, which is what leads to it. It's the fundamental urge that we have, it's the fundamental
driver of our survival. Yes.
The fundamental survival of our species. It's there for a reason. We not only need kids in today's world, we need more kids who are raised by good humans. I mean, the earth doesn't necessarily need more humans now. I get that. But one thing it sure as shit needs is more smart humans, more kind humans, more humans that are raised by conscious, self-responsible people. Our future depends on that. So, you know, I think that, look, I believe that we care way too much about what other people think generally in this culture. It's a disease. Literally, you're talking about something as important as having children, reproducing, and you know, worrying about how other people view it as egotistical and unwise. We got to let some of this stuff go, man. The bottom line is you should be listening to your own heart, your own intuition, your own inner voice, your own wisdom. And that's what we're trying to you know, help people down that road a little bit more at Lifebook.
Mm-hmm.
There is no right or wrong answer, Fatma, but there is a right or wrong answer for you. And your job is to really dial in and figure out what that is.
I think you nailed it too. I say this a lot when we get these kind of deeper questions or these, you know, kind of just a little more interesting questions. Fatma sounds really smart. I think she's probably up in her head. Get out of your head and get into your heart. I think that'll help you a little bit.
For sure.
Good luck. Next question coming from Tanya. How do you teach your children about how to deal with bullying from a really young age?
Oh, that's a great question. I never really had to do that much with you guys, but I'll tell you, if I had kids who were facing that challenge, my focus would be on helping them just build healthy self-esteem, helping them build their confidence, their self-respect, because, you know, kids who respect themselves won't let other people disrespect them. I think teaching them how to be appropriately self-assertive, how to stand up for themselves appropriately, you know, it's about self-esteem in my world.
Yes.
And just, you guys, I'll tell you, the best resource for the entry level self-esteem download is Nathaniel Brandon's audio program, Succeeding Through Inner Strength. That's just the classic go-to. You just can't go wrong with that one. There's also the six pillars of self-esteem that really talks about what self-esteem is and what it's made up of. And kids cannot start learning those things too early. How to appropriately stand up for themselves and be self-assertive, you know, how to take responsibility for themselves, how to be purposeful. I mean, the earlier, the better. So that's what I would do. I focus on self-esteem for sure.
Absolutely right. You know, bullies pick on the weakest target. You touched on all the right intangibles, and maybe as a specific strategy, martial arts,
yeah, that's
man,
good.
Teaches all those things.
I agree. Teach a kid how to stand up for themselves, how to defend themselves. You know, we've traveled the world for a long, long time. Our kids have grown up in other countries and in a lot of third world countries. And one of the things we've always taught our kids when it comes to traveling, being tourists or being in a place that you're not used to is, like you just said, that bullies go after the easiest target. You never want to be the easiest target. If you just project that, if you just project confidence, if you just make sure that you know, you set yourself up as someone who you want to be radiating self-respect,
yes,
and appropriate self-assertiveness and self-esteem. And bullies leave people like that alone because they know they're going to get called on it.
That's so true. And you know what you're touching on, it's all the right mental attitudes, but it's also being in your body, right? I mean,
that's true. Yep.
I mean, not to linger too much here, but well, let's talk about your situation, man. You were bullied as a kid. You were bullied really bad. And then I don't think it's a coincidence later that you were into Golden Glove boxing eventually, right?
Well, I'll tell you what I learned how to do is I learned how to run friggin' fast. I don't know. That's the track was before martial arts.
For oh, wow.
Me.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the reasons I was so fast is because, you know, because of my junior high experience and my grade school experience, I learned how to run. So I think that being in your body is important. I was so little though, you know, when I was growing up.
Right.
The black kids used to call me Baby Dumpling because I was little and white. And And yeah, I learned how to navigate that, and it made me stronger. That's the bottom line.
That's so great. Good luck, Tanya. Seriously. Next question coming from Raphael. How do you pass on your most important values and beliefs to your children while still respecting their freedom to choose and develop their own values and beliefs?
That's a great question. And you know, I was thinking about this the other night, Jordan. Everyone who has kids automatically has to become a teacher, whether they want to or not.
That's a good point.
Isn't that the truth?
By
That's
default. The truth. Yeah.
You got it. It's part of your responsibility. If you have kids, boom, you're a teacher for the next 18 years.
You might be the world's worst teacher, or you might be the most prepared teacher, but you are now officially a teacher.
Didn't think you were signing up for that program, right?
Wow, that's a good point, man.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, you know, Lifebook is a phenomenal tool to use to communicate to your kids what your own values and beliefs are. It's a phenomenal tool. Like, I'm right to the point right now with Justin, who just turned 15. Where I'm, as a matter of fact, we're apart for a couple of weeks. We're going to meet in Pula, Croatia for Mind Valley University. And he's to the point where I'm ready to tell him, just when you are ready to learn my life philosophy, I'm going to hand you my life book because it's all in there. Everything I believe about every important area of life, I'm going to communicate that to you, not expecting you to believe the same things I believe, but that'll give you a good head start. You know, that'll at least share with you what my values are. One of the things that we always did, always, Jordan, is that we raised our kids to understand that everybody is different. Mm-hmm. Everybody has different wants, different needs, different talents, different beliefs. These are our beliefs. You have to define yours. Now, when it comes to living in our house, you have to live by our rules, but very, very soon, you're going to be to the point where you've got to create your own rules. You got to take responsibility for creating your life the way that you want to create it. Right now you're in our ecosystem, but mm-hmm. but someday you're going to, and we've always tried to, you know, get our kids to start creating their own ecosystems as quickly as they can to get, you know, independence is our core value. Our core value is parents. Our job, we believe, is to get our kids healthy, functioning, up and running independently as quick as they possibly can so they can start living their own life. And of course, we're always going to be there to support them, but that's always been our goal. So what we pass our beliefs and our values onto our kids, or we communicate what they are very clearly, but then we do leave complete room for our kids to you know, create their own paths. Like, I think about Jesse, our oldest, who's 33, and Jesse has very similar values and beliefs to us in a lot of ways, and very different values and beliefs 100%. From us in yeah. a lot of ways. You, I feel, are a little more similar than Jess.
Yeah, I'd say so.
I think Justin is probably going to, who knows? Who knows what this, the newest generation of kids, they're just so different. They're living
you
in such
You don't care what the beliefs are. You just want them to be healthy.
That's exactly right. I want them to be autonomous. I want them to find their own path. I want them to be fulfilled. I want them to be happy. I want them to be successful human beings according to their own standards and values. And I'm here to support that process however I can. And part of that is sharing the great stuff that I've learned in my life while still knowing that not all of it is going to directly relate to their experience. So yeah, it's a beautiful question, Raphael. And it's something that we should all be concerned with, communicating the very best that's inside of us to our kids and still leaving room for them to find their own great stuff.
Absolutely. And definitely take a listen to all the other Lifebook podcast interviews this month. This is one of the strongest months I've ever had in any category ever doing this show. It's been incredible.
Is that right?
It really is. The Lyon Goodman belief clearing is out of this world. You'll learn more, Raphael. And Shelley Lefko did an amazing job. And interestingly enough, this will speak to Raphael's point, especially if they're too young to absorb kind of the more intellectual passing down. If they're younger and not quite ready for the whole Lifebook thing, example, living by example, that's how they learn. They're little mimics, they're little sponges, and that's how you get it into them if you can't really talk it into them, you know?
I'm going to say that's more than 50% of the battle. It's really, it's not near as much what you say as what you do. I mean, I just personally believe that the biggest responsibility that we have as parents is to be good people and live good lives. If you just do that one thing, so much will fall into place. I mean, yeah, you do have to give guidance. You do have to spend time. You do have to work on the other side of it. But so much is taken care of if you get that first part right.
Oh, that's great. I love that, man. Another great question from Raphael. My question is about parenting adult children. I realize that there's a gradual transfer of responsibility that occurs during my child's teen years. But how have you, John and Missy, dealt with this transfer that happens? And do you feel you continue to parent through the 20s, or is there more of a major shift?
Well, you know, I think that it's different for different families. And our family is very clannish. One of the things that in our family, Jordan, is that we all work together. We all work on the same companies. And that was the case with me and my dad. And that was the case with him and his dad. They had a little gas station, and my dad worked there, and I worked on my dad's stuff when I was your age, and you're working on, you and me are working on stuff together. Jesse's working with us. So we're a very clannish family. And I think when you're like that, when you're working together every day, when you're that close supporting each other, at that point you kind of signed up for the lifetime parenting program, right? I mean, we're all very connected in every way, but I think, you know, not every family is like that. So I really do think that this varies family to family.
And kid to kid, for sure.
Yeah, and from kid to kid, some kids are going to be way more independent and autonomous, and other kids are going to like Jade's a perfect example. Jade is sticking close to home at 18, while a lot of the other kids flew the coop fast. And like Justin wants to go as fast as he can. He's just like me. And just like Missy. Missy was like that too. Jade needs to stick around more and fine tune her skills and work on her talents a little bit more.
She's the best.
She's the best. I think every kid is different, but our personal family dynamic is that, you know, I feel like I'm still parenting you and Jesse in their 20s and 30s in a wonderful way and loving every minute of it and hoping it never stops.
I want to give my own father a backhanded compliment on air, but I'm going to, because you know I love you and that's what we do. No, I think that you are a better parent for adults than you are for kids, man. You are so good at empowering us to go beyond our... And the reason why I think that is because you had a lot of experience as an adult, because you had to grow up quick. You had to grow up quick. You've had a lot of time being an adult, man. And
I parented my siblings when I was, but here's the thing.
Exactly.
Thank you for that, Jordan. And I agree. I think I excel at parenting young, really young kids. And once they get adults, there's this no man's land in between where I'm not as good. Like I'm better with little kids.
You are. And that's true.
And I am with that middle section. And thank God for Missy. I mean, Missy's just a genius at the whole thing from start to finish. But yeah, thank you, Jess. I will tell you that Jordan, sorry about that. I call Jordan, Justin, Jordan. This is like this thing that happens to parents. It's nuts. It's completely
crazy. You went all J names, dude. You set yourself up for that.
I used to laugh at my parents so bad because they got so mixed up, and now here I am. Anyway, I definitely love parenting my adult kids. It's awesome because you can really get in the stuff, man. You can go deep. And I learn so much from them too. It's a great dynamic. And thanks for that compliment.
Totally. JB. Yeah. Good luck, Raphael, and get in there and as much as they want you. How about that? That's a good answer.
There you go.
Good luck, Raphael. Next question coming from Kathy. How can I be the best grandparent to my grandkids when their mom and dad are on the verge of a divorce? What should our role be to the kids? What should we say and do? What advice do you have as to the involvement of the grandparents to the mom and dad? Stay completely out of it? Because of the friction and attitude of the parents, I don't like to visit, which means I see the grandkids less. This is tough, Kathy.
Oh, man, it's so tough. My heart goes out to you, Kathy. I'm so, so sorry. If that were me, Jordan, geez, that's just so hard to even think about. But if it were me, I would probably try to stay as much out of the drama, the couple dynamic as I could. But I would I would let my kids know if they were in that situation that I'm hoping that they can be adults and protect the kids.
Oh, wow.
And have the kids, you know, best interests at heart. There's a new term called conscious uncoupling. And the first time I ever heard it was when Vishen and his wife are consciously uncoupling, which means getting a divorce, but doing it very consciously. They actually had a conscious uncoupling party and invited all their friends and announced it. And, you know, look at the divorce rate. It's high. And it's so sad how adults handle those things most of the time. It's a shit show. And it's a shit show that you know, kids are involved in, and it can really, really hurt. It can really hurt kids. So what you hope is that that adults can behave like grownups, and they can put the kids' best interests at heart. That's what I would hope for. And I would go ahead and take a look at this conscious coupling strategy and see if there's anything there, because, man, this is one of the hardest parts about life. And if you can get through it in one piece, if you can both just suck it up and bring your highest selves to that very, very difficult situation, it's best for everybody. But Kathy, I mean, this is no easy situation to be in, and my hopes and prayers are with you.
There's an upcoming episode of the Mastering Happiness podcast all about divorce. Joel's working on it right now. It's going to be really fascinating, the history, how to avoid it, when it goes down, how to treat the kids. This is exactly what you're looking for, Kathy. Everyone should subscribe to the Mastering Happiness podcast. But if I may weigh in, kids want love and stability. If you can give anything to the kids, you know, if you do see the kids, when you do see the kids, love and stability, any form of love and stability you can get them. That's what I've learned from speaking to people like Lyon Goodman and Joel.
100%. Fantastic advice, JB. If you can bring that as a grandparent, that is bringing a treasure to that tough situation.
Good luck, Kathy. Final question from Judith. How do I navigate and guide my children, now in their late teens, in the right direction? Giving them freedom and space to make decisions that shapes their own lives, yet guarding them against possibly making the wrong turn. It is such a fine balance, and it's almost impossible not to worry.
Yeah, it's almost impossible not to worry.
It's a good way to phrase it. That's a very accurate statement.
I forget who said it, but we have this quote in the Lifebook program. It's like, having children, the decision is momentous. It's to decide forever to have your heart go walking around outside your body.
Whoa. Wow. Right? Yeah, that's so true.
It is. I mean, I don't think there's anything that we can do to stop ourselves from worrying. We care so much, you know? And I mean, all we can do is give the best advice that we can and know that they're their own people and they'll eventually have to find their own path. But boy, that can be tough because we don't want to let go. It really is a balance. Giving them the freedom and space to shape their own lives and make their own decisions while still giving them as much wisdom as we can to guide them on their path. And again, Lifebook is a great tool for doing that. Anytime you can share best practices that you've discovered, the things that really work and generate good results across the most important categories of life, that's a great thing to be able to give to your children. And I'll tell you another thing that I would highly recommend, Jordan, that not near enough of us are doing these days, is getting our kids into nature. Getting them into nature and keeping them in nature, getting them off their screens and phones. And it's hard to do. I mean, that vision quest that we did with Justin when he was 14 last year completely changed his life, and he's going to have that forever. He spent four nights and 5 days on a mountain by himself in nature with no input other than this beautiful world that we live in, and it was hard for him, but it changed him at a fundamental level, and he'll carry that forever.
100%.
So that's another thing I would suggest. Use your Lifebook, convey some wisdom from your Lifebook, get him into nature. And you know, Judith, I can tell that you're going to do okay because you're already so conscious about this.
Exactly.
And so conscious about the balance that needs to be struck. You're going to be just fine.
The fact that you're asking this question means that you're going to turn out okay, Judith.
But totally.
I just kind of thought of something. Maybe you can comment on this before we wrap it up. That no man's land, that in-between time, you know, kids are really, really receptive when they're young. They just, their eyes get wide and they stare at you and they just receive. And then also when they're older, they kind of come back around and they're more receptive. But that no man's land, you know what they do respond to a lot of the time? Positive role models. There's idolization in that phase. So if you can get some role models that are real badasses and appeal to that demographic, but still have integrity and good values, by the way, that's not easy to find. But if you can just kind of steer them towards that thing, for instance, martial arts is a perfect example, or just getting into anything deep, right? And saying, this is a guy who has it figured out. You should be more like this guy. That's a way to kind of do that. Am I onto something?
You know, I love that, JB, and I'll tell you why. Because there are so many bad role models out there. There, you know, you take a look at social media. You take a look at the people
that they follow.
You take a look at the crazy friggin' culture that we're living in right now. And if you can do anything to affect your children's choice of people to look up to, you know, do it. For sure, right?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I'll have to think that down more and see how you can kind of make that happen and execute.
Just look at their default. Look at the defaults that are out there. They're not necessarily what we want our kids to be looking up to and admiring.
The number one person on Instagram is Dan Bilzerian, and he's just with nude models and guns and just the worst kind of limbic, you know, kind of reactionary kind of engagement that you could think of. So I see what you mean, and you're right. We got to get more badasses out there, man.
You know, it's interesting. The world is so different now than it was 10 years ago, Jordan, 10 years ago. You know, our brains are all connected up right now. Mm-hmm. And it's so easy to be mean on social media, and everything's so intense and everything's so acute. And we just live in this spinning cauldron of information, and it's going so fast. Now, when we got to Hawaii and got really, you know, back to nature, basically, and looking at how the world is, kind of feeling a little bit separate from it because we are in a different environment now. We are in nature, man. It's making me want to suggest more and more to get your kids into nature, to get them reconnected with the planet, to get them off of their screens. I feel like that's really good advice for all of us right now.
I'm excited to connect with Wim Hof on this podcast now that we're teamed with Mind Valley, and I got to speak with him a little bit, and when we got along well. That is his whole thing, man. His story is tragic. His wife had depression and ended up committing suicide, he nature cured him. The cold glaciers cured him. And he has this whole theory on how society is making us sick because it's pulling us away from nature. It's really fascinating and I think very accurate.
There's a book by Bill Plotkin called Nature and the Human Soul that's an absolute masterpiece. I haven't read it. It's too much for me. Missy read it and a lot of my friends have read it, and I've gotten the cliff notes on it. And that is the message, is that so many of the ills that our society is experiencing can be directly tied back to the fact that we've lost connection to nature. It's so important. And, you know, Miss and I were on that vision quest with Justin. We were all separately. We all experienced it separately. But nature healed me on that trip. Just lying down on the earth is our mother. And this sounds super spiritual and esoteric, but I mean it totally scientifically, materially. The earth can actually heal you. I mean, Wim Hof would be saying the same thing if he was on here right now. And that's what our kids need so much. We've just really moved away from that as a culture. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that we can figure out a way to find our way back to nature, because we need it.
That's why I love Lifebook, and that's why I love Mind Valley, because we're getting this kind of information out there. There's no one doing this research. I mean, you know, Wim Hof hooking himself up to machines and doing his meditation. That's a big, big contribution to society. What we're doing at Lifebook here, I would like to think, is a big contribution to society.
There's no question about that. You know, I'm so proud and I'm so grateful and I'm so just thankful for everybody in this community, all the wisdom that we're sharing. I want to leave with one more thought on parenting before we end. And it's this: right now, Justin just turned 15. And one of the things that Miss and I want to do this year with him is start to explore the personality profiles. We want him to learn more about himself, and we want to learn more about him. So it's time for Justin to take the Enneagram test, right, so we can find out what he is on the Enneagram. I think you were 15, if I'm not mistaken, when you took the Enneagram test for the first time and discovered that you were a 5, and that was life-changing for you, Jordan.
100%.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'd be interested to know. My head is already spinning through the possibilities, and yeah.
Yeah.
Anyone who hasn't done that, yeah, please, the wisdom of the
human design. The human design system is another one. I don't understand that one. It's so deep and crazy and complex.
Totally.
But our dear friend Manesh understands that, so we're going to have him run Justin's human design. There's strengths finders. There's a lot of those personology tests out there. And one of the things we want Justin to do this year is take the great ones so that he can discover more about himself and we can discover more about him. That's I think, a great strategy for kids in that, you know, when they're going from being young people to being young men and women, that's a nice time to really dig deep in discovering your own personality type.
Totally. I love it, man. This was a fantastic episode as usual.
Oh, thanks so much.
What do we got coming up next month?
We have social.
Love social, man. Very interesting category.
For sure.
Very dynamic category. So I look forward to that. Everybody, please send in your questions. You can send them in on this page with the form below. This is John Butcher and Jordan River signing off. Thank you so much for listening. We love you all. We'll see you next time on the Lifebook Member Podcast.